Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this 21st of January, and it's an absolute delight to be with you this morning. I hope you feel the same, in the sense of you're ready to talk to us, you're ready to listen, and you're ready to participate. We would love for you to do all of those things. Don't tax yourself. Whatever you want to do, it's up to you. Don't pull a muscle or anything.
No need for that.
It's a great new day. We'll try to keep it that way.
It depends on which muscle.
That's right. Exactly, Alan. And sometimes, you know, they can sneak up on you in the worst possible places. We have a fantastic panel, and I want to introduce them to you. Again, a reminder that you can join us. All you have to do is go to panel@wamc.org, P-A-N-E-L, panel@wamc.org. Please use that address. Keep your letters short and to the point, and we'll get to as many as possible. We'd love to hear what's on your mind on this post-inauguration day. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning. I'm fine. I did not get out for my pre-dawn walk, my dark in the walk, because it was 13 degrees or something like that.
13 and snowing here.
It's really a little bit much, but I'll get out. Don't you worry about me.
I'm not. I trust you. I know you'll get out. All right. was it the satellite recalibrating? Is that what that was? Okay.
No, I think it was Rosemary.
Oh, was it?
I didn't even know Rosemary had a sound.
Oh, you're going to blame my cuckoo clock next.
I'm getting me a cuckoo clock too.
you just need that little sound effect.
one with a little button on it, so that every time somebody says something I don't like, I'll press it and it'll say cuckoo.
Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Henler is in the house. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Joe. What a great day.
Yeah, it feels pretty good.
I woke up excited about looking at the news.
I know. It's all very counterintuitive these days.
Joe, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I can't believe that so many of us really weren't in touch with just how depressing this Trump administration was, and the kind of relief that we felt when it went to Biden and when the thing was finally done. It's amazing.
Yep.
It has been an amazing couple of hours. It hasn't even been a full day yet, but it's we'll talk all about it. But we also welcome counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm actually driving from Washington, D.C. My daughter's driving, and it's sunny and really warm down here, and it's really a new day. So I'm happy.
Excellent.
You sound great. You sound great. Better than usual, the phone, I mean, not you,
man,
but the phone.
The stress I had to get over down here was astronomical, but now it's all done, and we're moving on.
Linda Ellerbe joins us, Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, and we are thrilled to have her back. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I am quite wonderful this morning. I suppose that's the only way. I echo everyone else's sentiments. I suppose there's a little of me still trying to get used to taking yes for an answer. It was a good day, and I'm not going to let anybody take that away from me. I know we're going to talk about work to be done and the problems, and every bit of this exists, but for one day it was okay.
Yeah,
it was good. There were moments that were thrilling. The relief was overwhelming. We are all breathing again. I don't know how anybody can. And the crazies didn't show up. There were no terrorist acts tried yesterday at the inauguration. I think we have to say that was a good day.
A very, very good day, and a lot to, and yes, a lot of work to be done, but certainly comforting to know that we are where we are, at least on this first day.
Did you all read in the paper that the Proud Boys and some of the other nut groups are turning on Trump now for not having done enough?
Yeah, I have it on our docket today. It's a great story, an interesting story anyway. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. I'm going to limit my talk of doom today, but I warn those of you who hate frivolity that I definitely want to talk about fashion, cool new poets, and the best fireworks show I have ever seen.
Well,
I want that on
and I'm with Rosemary.
Today.
You know, let's talk about the fireworks for
Rosemary.
A second.
Rosemary and I talked fashion each other yesterday in emails, and there were some people who felt that was frivolous of us, and I'm here to tell you
it was
I'm
not.
I'm here to tell you that one can be interested in politics and know about politics and also have an interest in fashion.
Good for
one
both of you.
Yes.
Lady Gaga is a goddess. Hair is like the Statue of Liberty.
Rock
and that
star.
Giant skirt.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Highlight of the day. Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. And
the golden microphone. Don't forget the golden microphone.
The golden microphone was fantastic. You know, here's the thing. Here's the thing that I couldn't believe. And it was odd that this was my first reaction when I was watching the most glorious fireworks display I've ever seen in my entire life. But how did they get that much explosive material in that city under wraps? Given the security in that city.
Joe, I was looking at
the
smoke.
My sister at the Washington Post said, thank God the insurrectionists didn't hit that stash last week.
Good Lord.
Where were they firing them from? Was it on this side of the river or that side of the river?
I think it may have been that side of the river. But, Malcolm, do you know?
Actually, yeah. In fact, I saw the movement of those fireworks. And they were in Enterprise rent-a-car truck vans, but the security was astronomical. I mean, they had a 15 police car escort coming down Massachusetts Avenue. They were fired from Constitution Avenue on the south side of the Capitol, and from Haynes Point. All the really big ones were fired from Haynes Point, which is just next to the Jefferson Memorial.
It was really something. And yes, we can certainly talk about fashion. I do want to mention Kamala Harris's niece's husband, Nicholas, was wearing the coolest Nike Dior 1 shoes I've ever seen in my life. Did you see those? They're silver with it. Did you see those, Malcolm? They were amazing. Absolutely amazing.
They're all over the internet.
Well,
I mean, they've made a huge, I think they were trending on Twitter yesterday.
They are,
you know, because first off, who can afford them?
Well, they're $2,000. That's right. But who? I mean, but he's a lawyer; he can afford them. Good for him. But man, they were awesome. Okay.
It was a good fashion day yesterday.
We'll talk about whatever.
And Bernie, you know.
Oh, Bernie's mittens.
Bernie's mittens.
Bernie's mittens. There are.
And his facial expression, even with the mask.
Just all alone, and it was great. It was just fantastic. You just expected a pigeon to land on his shoulder.
I can't believe you guys are talking about the male fashion. Could we please talk about
isn't this
J-Lo?
Wonderful, Rosemary?
Well, if we talk about the female fashion, you yell at us, Rosemary.
It's the female fashion that mattered, that angel. Although I did like that the Country Music Center.
Garth Brooks.
Now I'm blanking at it.
Garth Brooks.
Yes, Garth Brooks. That it came out in jeans. People took offense at that. Although Jim Jordan in his shirt sleeves never bothered them. Garth in jeans did. And then he sang like an angel, so all is forgiven. What a cool day.
Whatever Lady Gaga was wearing for the brooch there, that I think was a real life. It was real life though, right?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was an eagle or a vulture, but it turned out it was a dove.
It was a what?
Yeah,
a dove. Yeah, life size dove. And I just loved how she was talking everybody up after the she was just going up and just like gushing at Obama and Michelle, and it was really it was great.
Her national anthem was earth-shattering.
It was.
I
fantastic.
Really got thrilled by that. And when she turned to the flag that they tried to tear down 2 weeks ago and said that the flag was still there, everybody I know gushed over that. Guy crying.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah, that's great.
Me too.
That's great.
Raise
me
your
too.
Hand if you didn't cry.
My son predicts that 75 million heads of Trumpers burst open when J-Lo broke out in Spanish. It just exploded.
I have to say, Linda just asked the question about who didn't cry, but I was holding it together pretty well until Justice Sotomayor inaugurated Kamala Harris, and then I just lost it. And that was beautiful. But let us.
Can I say something in Sotomayor's defense? Because online, several people have ragged her because she. Well, as you know, many Republicans have deliberately mispronounced Kamala Harris's first name as a way to keep her in the category of the other. She's strange. So they call her Kamala or Kamalalala or something like that. And it became a little bit of a hate phrase, people who did that. Yesterday, Justice Sotomayor said Kamala. And online last night, some people were saying, well, you know, is she a my God, what is she thinking? Was she a dissing? No. In Spanish, that would be the proper pronunciation of Kamala. Any Spanish-speaking person would automatically say Kamala because that is where the accent goes,
right.
Period.
Yeah.
So I just want to say to those people who thought she was trying to make an editorial remark by how she pronounced Kamala Harris's name, I don't believe she was.
And let us just take a moment.
That's fascinating.
It is. It is fascinating. I just want to take a moment to my new hero is a 22-year-old woman by the name of Amanda Gorman, who gave the inaugural poem. And yes, finally, we returned to inaugural poem. That was good. To quote, we've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. And the norms and notions of what just is isn't always justice. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. 22 years old. Man.
I can do better than that, Joe. I'm actually bringing a little bit of non-news, but news in a way this morning. She was on Nick News when she was on 11 years
wow.
old. And I went back and we found the show last night. And the show was about, it was a debate. We would do things where we would say, here's one side, here's the other, see what you think is right. And this one was about, was it ethical to use animals for entertainment of humans? We're talking about circus animals,
yep.
movie animals, various things. And she came on, and she, in essence, was the one voice she debated the head cat trainer for Barnum Bailey. And she brought her around to slavery. And she is articulate and eloquent, and she is 11 years old. And she talks about, now that we have seen people in slavery, how can you take people from their environment and then speak for them and say, oh, look, they're happy. I promise you, we're taking care of them, and they're happy. See, they're happy. And she talks about that in the sense of how white people speak for black people. It's stunning. She was articulate at age 11.
Mm.
I have found this footage, and I've handed it over to Nickelodeon, getting it out there today, just because she is remarkable at age 11.
Wow, that's a great story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she, and I guess had overcome a speech impediment herself, much mm-hmm. like the president. And so it was a fascinating story, and that was just, you know, at the end, it was at the end of the proceedings, and you think, oh, okay, well, I've tapped my emotions, and then she came out, and I was like, all right, well, I'm just goo now. Let's see. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to take a break in a minute.
I wondered where the kid who stuttered, who made such an impression at the Democratic convention was. Did the Bidens invite him? Maybe one of you guys?
I think
so. Know?
I think he was there, yes. I think so. I think I read that.
Oh, he in both times now, the convention and the inauguration, the Bidens have managed to make it such an inclusive affair, and not just gender, not just race, but age too. And both of those young people were outstanding.
And the fact that the guard that they were talking about, that was the one who brought what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, diverted them, and that, by the way.
Yeah, but
That was another time I lost it when they were talking about him.
Yeah, and he. Chaperoned, but whatever that word is, that to bring her down the stairs and present her. Yeah,
bodyguard.
Yeah, bodyguard. Bodyguard. That's right.
I thought you were talking about when he actually did what he's being rewarded for.
Yeah, yesterday when he was part of the ceremony.
Escort.
Escort. There you go. Thank you very much.
Well, and the woman who did the Pledge of Allegiance, that was me too.
Yeah, it was so much, and Rosemary, your son couldn't be more right. As loud as the fireworks last night were, I'm sure the heads exploding of Trump supporters was just as loud and cavernous yesterday, because there was a lot that changed.
Well, and I suspect Malcolm's been reading some of the same things I've been reading, where we've been watching implosions, and this is what I think Alec was referring to between the Proud Boys and the QAnon stuff. It's just, it's the first time I've ever had a pleasure reading some of that stuff.
I feel like I have to make a retraction, because I spoke out in the roundtable earlier this week about Pollyannish symbolism and the unimportance of ritual, and yet I had the TV on all day yesterday. I found it very moving, as you all obviously did too. That was an important thing to do. It was incredibly well produced, and I hope we never go back to inaugural balls and in-person stuff and always do it this way.
No, I mean, there's a case to be made. I mean, just even that event with the previous presidents together at Arlington was great, and probably would not have been able to happen under normal circumstances. We have to take a break. Obviously, we're kind of free-forming it this morning, which is fun, because we'll get everybody's thoughts, and then we'll become a little more focused here in a minute. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, but you can be unfocused too and write us a letter of what struck you, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Alan Chartok, Jim Henler, Malcolm Nance, Linda Ellerbe, and Rosemary Armeo making up the panel this morning. Did I say Jim Henler? I think I did.
You did.
Thank you. we have a lot of letters, and I just want to get to these, some of these real quick, because they're just random, and I as our comments were random at the beginning of the program, I was so inspired, writes Simi, that I cried when Kamala was sworn in. Oh, hell, I cried all day. Amanda Gorman blew me away. I've listened to it three times now. I want to congratulate Rosemary on the departure of sniveling Stephen Miller. Congratulations to all of us. We have this from Linda, who says, I agree with Linda Ellerbe totally about being able to breathe again. I have thought and spoken that very same phrase to myself. We can all breathe again, and it is great fun listening. So few minutes into the program to the lightness and happiness so apparent. Laugh, enjoy it. And to Rosemary, I really enjoy hearing your cuckoo clock. Hearing yours got me to restart mine, even though the time is way off. Well, it didn't stop Rosemary's. It is now an art object. Great day to
exactly. All. It's not a timepiece. It's a piece of art. I tell that to everybody.
All right.
I love cuckoo clocks.
Get ready, Rosemary and Linda. Here you go. This is from Marie. I understand the interest in fashion yesterday, but would the women on the panel talk about the plight of women to always be rated on their fashion? On such a huge day for women yesterday, I had to listen to a woman commentator talk only about how Kamala, was able to walk down the stairs in heels without falling, rather than her abilities that led to her shattering the glass ceiling. That said, Gaga, what a moment.
Okay, so I don't think women should not be rated on their appearance. I just think that men should also be, as you saw this panel do today. Appearances of humans is of wired in interest to other humans. It's the first thing we judge other people at. So why would we try to ignore it? Now, that doesn't mean you forget what they're saying and doing, but their appearances, it's extremely important. That Trump had that appearance was part of what we talked about. I just think that we worry too much about whether it's frivolous or not. The problem came when only women got rated on outward look and not the men. But you treat them all the same, and I'm cool with it.
Linda?
If all they talk about is appearance, then you have a problem. Otherwise, I agree with Rosemary. And I don't think that any woman was belittled yesterday. I know my own feeling. If I can, I'd just like to share that moment when Kamala stood up and was sworn in as vice president. I'm sitting here on the sofa in our living room with Rolf and me, Luna the dog, and I found myself standing up, and I was standing there, and I burst into tears. And Rolf looked at me, and he said, "What's wrong? Are you?" And I said, "No." it's not that. I said, I'm watching Justice Sotomayor swear in Vice President Harris. And I said, the moment has got me. And he said, well, yeah, that's nice. And I turned and I said, no, let me try to explain it in a way you can understand, maybe. I want you to try to think of how you would feel if at this moment you were 76 years old and you were watching the first man elected to national office in the United States of America. Would that seem something important to you? You had never seen a man in office before, and you're 76, never in national office. And it stopped him, and he thought it over, and he said, you're right. I just don't think about it that way. Well, we don't think about it that way, but yesterday was a day to think about it that way. And I did.
I love and Linda Ellerbee.
Yes, we all do.
And that was my feeling. That was the emotion. It was stunning. It was waves of emotion, and it didn't stop all day.
All of that said, high heels have to go. They are death traps.
I'm telling you, high heels are killers.
Really?
Back on the Converse high tops. I wore them for 25 years anchoring Nick News, and they're excellent, excellent.
Can I ask a question? Because Jim brought this up.
Jill Biden was tortured. I'm sure Jill Biden was tortured all day, and I did worry about the Vice President of the United States falling on her butt because of the shoes she had on. Crazy. Now that
no
Melania
woman was
gone,
able to look
no
forward
more
coming down the steps because she has to wear high heels and go down those steps.
I was watching Joy Reid interview Nancy Pelosi the night before the inauguration, and Nancy Pelosi had heels on. I don't know, on those marble steps, you tell me how that's possible.
All I know is I woke up this. All I know is I woke up this morning. The first thing I got was a lecture from Roselle about how crazy these high heels were and why they have to go. But that's it. I think you really got your hand on something.
They can't be good for anybody.
I've met Nancy Pelosi twice in the Capitol, and she wears high heels all the time, and she runs them like a boss. Let me tell you, they are not a joke when she wears them. They're almost lethal weapon systems.
That's great, but here's a suggestion.
Well, so does
Dior
Melania,
one.
But that's what women have had to do. You know, you have to get height and gravitas by wearing high heels. It's just outrageous, and it's really sexist, and I'm on a campaign to get rid of them.
All right.
You know what? In Europe, they have really nice flats that look like high heels, but they're flats. They look good. They should shift them. You can run in them.
We've talked a lot about the inauguration itself and the ceremony. We have a couple of letters on this, and I think it's appropriate that we mention it because I know Rosemary and I were texting about this last night. But Jen Psaki last night at 7 o'clock, giving her first press conference, news conference in the White House. Rosemary, I know your overall thoughts about daily briefings, but we got this from Mick, who says, if Jen Psaki's performance yesterday is any indication of the rest of the Biden administration, we're going to be all right. What did you make of it, and does that change your thoughts on daily briefings if that's the way they're run?
Well, I want to point out, you know, I'm in favor of her, and I think she's really trying, and that was a good faith effort yesterday to start off right. But Kayleigh McEnany started out by promising never to lie, and we know where that went. So I'm going to be watching over the next couple of weeks. You need to ask me this question in a month. But yes, it was a good start. She didn't come out and say it was the biggest crowd ever, period, and storm off. That's a good sign. And there is an effort to actually talk to reporters. She has to do what the new president wants, which is to lower the temperature. Never is that more so needed in the press, with the press.
Heather writes,
no president should ever promise not to lie. That's a bad idea. No press secretary should ever promise not to lie. No president should ever promise not to lie. There are occasions where a president has to lie to the people. There are occasions where a press secretary has to lie to the people because it is the right thing to do. And to go out and promise, give a blanket promise in the beginning that that's never going to happen is short-sighted. I'll give you just one example. Go back to inauguration, 1980, the hostages, the Iranian hostages. The president knew,
And everybody, both presidents and everybody else knew that there were Canadians. The Canadians were harboring American hostages in the embassy in Tehran. The president had to stand up and say, no, this isn't, there's none of that going on. No, there are no hostages anyplace else but in the embassy. To lie would have killed, had those people killed. And the media knew all of this, too. We knew that there were hostages being held there. We're supposed to always tell the truth to the American people. Had we told that truth, those people would have been dead. So there are occasions where lying is, in fact, necessary. If they just say, we're going to try and tell you the truth at all times, I'd be happy with that.
Heather writes to us and says, yes. When Kamala Harris was sworn in, I cried too. I'm a 52-year-old white woman, and this was a moving moment in the history of our country. P.S. The whole high heel thing just sucks. So, and there you go.
Joe,
go ahead, Jim.
You were starting to change the topic a little bit. I want to go back.
Sure.
Because not only the press conference, I'd like to point out that you know, when Biden said there were things he was going to do on day one, he did things on day one. I don't know how many people have had a moment to actually go through the 17 executive orders he signed, but they're just phenomenal.
Yeah, I did this morning. You're right.
He overturned all of the, you know, worst environmental policies of the Trump administration, revoked the permit for Keystone, reversed rollbacks on vehicles. Put in an ethics rule for his for anybody joining the administration. He put back in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. For those who don't know what that one is, that so Trump had actually suspended the rule that doesn't let the federal government discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identification. That's now back in place. I mean, it was just a phenomenal thing that not just, you know, all the pomp and circumstance, but the substance was there too.
I want to take a break here because I have a letter from a listener. This is to Malcolm, which asks a huge question, so I want to give him proper time to answer it. So let's take a break. When we come back, we'll do that. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Kara wants to know, Malcolm, please tell us what it was like security-wise at the inauguration, and what do you see going forward in terms of extremist groups?
Well, first off, the security was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, technically, they should have had this in place in time for January 6th. The city was in lockdown, and when the riots happened on the 6th, a couple of days later, I recommended everything from K Street South all the way to the waterfront be shut down, and from 2nd Street Northeast all the way down be shut down. And then that whole area made an exclusion zone. That's precisely what they did. It was massive. There were three levels of security checkpoints to get to Pennsylvania Avenue from New York Avenue, for those of you who know it. That's a distance, right? And then at every major street intersection, they had a armored six-wheel personnel truck or a Humvee with a minimum of six fully armed guards with their body armor, helmets, riot gear, with one Metropolitan Police officer who was also there. Every intersection all the way across that route, three layers deep. It was massive. And then on the parade route itself, I got this from television because no one could go to see the parade. They lined it shoulder to shoulder with soldiers on both sides and police facing outward towards any particular threats. So, there was a cordon sanitaire. So the second part of what's next, I think, though, there's a lot of turmoil going on. Jim can tell you this, too. I get up every morning at 3 a.m. and I start sorting through the Telegram channels and all the rest of these right-wing extremists. They're pretty angry right now. They're confused, especially the QAnon people, about how the mass arrest didn't happen. And they thought that it was Trump that brought in all those soldiers to arrest all the liberals and take them off to Guantanamo Bay. So I would say 50% of them on the QAnon side of the world are very confused. The Proud Boys, they may be a little discouraged. The Boogaloo Boys, all these other militias. But, you know, I have a whole book coming out on this. Trump is pretty much ready to start a new political party. He hinted at it that it would be called the Patriot Party, and with the lion as its symbol. And as soon as he gets a mouthpiece, Parler is back up. It's on Russian servers out of Moscow. As soon as he gets a mouthpiece to talk to his people, he's going to come roaring back and be a pain in all of our butts. And it's going to mobilize these people into a possibly armed rejectionism.
So to follow up on that, this was a question that was asked a few times yesterday by different pundits, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, which is, how long will this level of security be in place in Washington, do you think? And what does that mean ultimately for the security of the Capitol, of the White House, and of the president, of course, but also of the state capitals as well?
Well, the 25,000 soldiers are going to leave. You know, when Trump had his inauguration, they had 8,000 soldiers in the city. It's a pretty standard fare. But what they're going to do is they're going to push the security perimeters outward. So you're going to see a lot more checkpoints off of bridges, places come down. They are not going to shut down the National Capitol forever. I mean, you know, then the terrorists win, right? But what they're going to do is they're going to limit, they're going to know who's going into hotels. They're going to, you know, they closed all Airbnbs for the entire inauguration week. They canceled all reservations in the city. So they're going to know who's coming in the city. The Capitol is probably going to have quite a bit of National Guard security for some time and the approaches to the White House. Between you and me, Lafayette Square looks like an armed camp with the giant Texas barriers in front of the White House. I wouldn't be surprised if the administration says, hey, let's lower those. Let's let people come back out, even if they want to protest. You know, no one is ever going to get the numbers of 40,000 people with 3,000 to 6,000 storming the Capitol ever again. No one's going to have that.
Let's go.
So, Joe, can I comment on the other part of that? The one about, you know, what's happening on the right wing channels and things like that. You know, what's really interesting is, how quickly some of this is turning. And I'm looking at one of the sites we monitor. Some of this was shared by one of my colleagues, Jennifer Goldbeck, down at the University of Maryland, who's become a very well-known social media analyst. But there's a whole lot of people who now are trying to come up with what happened. And what's interesting is they're turning on Trump in an interesting way. They're saying, you know, it turns out he was in it for the money. Right, that he was using us, things like that. So suddenly these folks who felt that he was on their side now are like, you know, he just used us. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. I think most of them will sort of just fade into the background. I suspect Malcolm and I are both scared about what the really hardcore will do, because now they may be unanchored. So we'll see.
Right. Jim, I saw that too. There's a segment of that, you know, the people who feel like this was all a grift. There's another segment that are changing it, that Trump is now playing 20-dimensional chess, and now that he's a civilian, he can really work underground against the corporate autocracy and all that stuff. But the main force, the Boogaloo Boys, the Proud Boys, the guys who are not hardcore QAnon believers, these guys are still waiting for orders. Right. They're not abandoning Trump, and neither is his 75 million person base. You know, I go on also gun forums and a whole bunch of other mainstream places, and they're waiting. They're waiting for him to do something. There was a poll yesterday that I saw that the top movers for the Republican Party, and this was in a gun forum, was Ted Cruz and Donald Trump Jr. And if Trump actually comes out with this Patriots Party, I wouldn't doubt for a minute that Ted Cruz would jump ship and go over there. He's seen like a savior over there. So we'll see. But I think our insurgency is just starting.
Alan, any thoughts on that?
I don't have any thoughts. I'm delighted with the panel today. And like everybody else out there, I'm listening to them because they're better than I am.
Well, I'm just curious about the third party idea, though, of that gaining traction and what it does. I mean, aren't you splintering the Republican Party? And
I'm all in favor.
Without question, that's exactly what you're doing.
I'm sorry. Okay. What Republican Party is that we're talking about? Is there a Republican Party other than the Trump Party? I don't remember that party.
No, Linda, I don't think you're right about that.
Yeah, they bought. They broke it. They bought it.
No. Very good.
All I can say, guys, is that the ISIS-Al-Qaeda split was pretty successful. Just make a note of that.
Thanks for asking my opinion, Joe.
Hey, Alan, what do you think?
You know, I truly think that what happens here is there is another Republican Party, Linda. In other words, the party of Bush, of the Bushes and the other people. The old-style Republican Party is still very much...
You mean the old-style Reagan Republican Party that began to speak to us in code about black people? How old back are we going?
No, I'm not a poop. Hey, Linda. I have no patience either. But the truth of the matter is, I don't like what Ronald Reagan did, but I'm telling you, there is a Republican Party, and there is a Trump Party. If they split, as a point Joe just made, it really is profound, of course, it means that the Democrats will keep winning. So it's, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see how it happens.
Anybody else on that? Okay. Good. We have peace. That's good.
Not necessarily.
Silence is not always to be mistaken for peace, Joe.
That's right.
You know, but what I do think is...
I know that as being Irish, it's just sort of silently brooding. Yes?
Risking actually being serious for a second. You know, I think what is interesting is if that party starts and if Trump becomes the leader... And it's going to fight to move even further towards that right-wing base. That's where the core of the stuff Malcolm and I have been talking about is going to come from. And that's something that's going to need careful observation, monitoring, because if it's just seen as that's just a lunatic fringe, ignore them. I think that's something we have to be very, very careful not to fall into that trap.
To what extent?
But they are lunatics. It's not a fringe if it's like 30%. But how stupid.
Well, so if you look at history.
The QAnon thing and then just switch?
If you look at history, it's, you know, that's where brown shirts come from. That's where movements come from. It's a dedicated, crazy 20%. It's not that, you know, kind of Trumpian 40%. And, you know, again, if he splits the party, he'll be creating that right-wing movement out at the right. He won't have to worry about the middle.
Let's remember about...
online and mess with their minds. Have them build a pyramid in my backyard or something. I probably could move them to do it.
Alan, what do you think?
Let's remember all... let's remember all of those people who... Republican legislators, for example, who thought Trump was a nut, who hated his guts. We can see some of that coming out now. But who were afraid... They were afraid because, as it has been properly pointed out here, the Republican people, the Republican voters, loved Trump, and they were scared to death about it.
Travis writes to us and says, I'm not convinced Trump will be able to form a new party and sustain it despite the obvious schism in the Republican Party. The two-party system has lasted in the U.S. for a very long time. The parties did evolve, but if I am not mistaken, rarely splintered so suddenly. Corrine says
That is how we got Abraham Lincoln, you know. I mean, that's where we start.
Theodore Roosevelt couldn't do it. Theodore Roosevelt couldn't do it. Donald Trump can't.
That's right. Well, we don't know.
I think this is unique. I think he has the juice. These people are not joking. I think he has. He could take a good 75% to 80% of the Republicans. What he can't take is their money men that are behind them in industry. But I think he has the ability to, you know, try to Bernie this thing and do it on the backs of the money of the true Trump believers.
Do Bernie, a verb.
Yes, yeah. Bernie this.
Trump won't have the gloves, though.
Mittens. Let me get to as many letters as I can here.
We're back to mail fashion again.
Hello. Oh, it's a musical interlude. Corinne writes to us and says, It is real. We have officially entered the era of detente when Malcolm Nance advises on ladies' European shoes. Therein alone lies my prolonged breath of fresh air. Yay.
Love them.
Jim
says, horny Italian flats.
Can Malcolm explain why he feels that number of people could never storm the Capitol again? In my mind, it happened once. Those people have not gone away, and it could happen again. I defer to Malcolm.
Yeah, you know, it's now the template for security. If I don't know how things are going, but people have floated my name to help take a look at the security of the Capitol, and I have some thoughts, and those thoughts are that attack is the minimum standard of how the Capitol should be defended. So whatever it would take that we have right now, that's the minimum security we're going to need for the Capitol. They've already taken, you know, I think it was obvious to everybody, but I had said on air that they need a new fence, a Buckingham Palace-style 20-foot fence with spikes on the top. And last week, the architect of the Capitol was directed to study a fencing plan for the Capitol.
So Trump will get his wall.
No, it'll be pretty. Not a wall.
That's what he said about
by,
his wall.
By the way, one of the executive orders canceled all building on the wall and canceled the emergency declaration that made it possible.
We got a lot of letters on Bernie and his mittens, so I'll skip those. Colleen says, I hate to look backwards, but speaking of fashion, did anyone else think Melania looked like a Russian nesting doll as she and her husband walked off Air Force One in Florida? I did not notice that, I must say.
What is that? What is a Russian nesting doll?
Oh, they're the little dolls where they sit into each other. One goes into the other. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
They always have their arms folded.
She looked like the grieving widow when she got on the plane at Andrews.
Yeah,
she was wearing all black. She looked like Natasha Faye from Boris and Rocky.
Yes.
I mean, from Bowie and Rocky. And she spoke like her, too, right? My first thought was, is she announcing their flight to Moscow? But when she came off, she looked like she was wearing some curtains from the 60s.
You know.
Okay, we have disintegrated.
Yeah, we have a little bit, but that's all right. So we'll take a break, and we'll rinse and wash off and repeat, and everything will be fine. We'll come back. We have a lot to talk
about.
We have a great battle. We have a lot to talk about. We'll continue after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our post-inaugural edition. We welcome you and your letters panel at WAMC.org. People are certainly taking us up on the offer because we have many, many letters. I want to get, I'm going to run through them real quick here and then we'll move on to other topics, but just some things I want to get out of the way. We have been corrected or at least informed by many listeners that the young man with the stutter, his name is Braden Harrington, and he was included in the celebration last night, and he read from JFK's speech. So we want to point that out. Gina writes to us and says,
thank you. I thought I saw it all. Thank you very much. I'm going to go back and look for that. I was really struck with him. So I appreciate that.
Excellent.
And as Casey said, you can look it up. I said he was there.
Gina says, I'm loving Roundtable Fashion Edition. Thank you for being human. That's good. Erica says, yes, for many years, people were on the wrong side of this, meaning radicalization, cancel culture and radicalization, and some are slowly coming back and we need to give them a moment to do such. We will know if they are sincere or not. To be de-radicalized doesn't happen overnight. Stockholm syndrome is a real thing. And so is being manipulated for years. Joanna says, I want to thank Malcolm for his testimony at the Black Congressional Caucus hearing last week. This hearing is still available for viewing on C-SPAN. I hope everyone will listen to Malcolm's full statements there about the dangers before us from domestic terrorists. Congratulations, Malcolm, on that.
Okay. Just FYI, that a short version of that testimony is coming out as an op-ed in the Washington Post. And speaking to the letter that was before that, unfortunately, this is not Stockholm syndrome. Stockholm syndrome is a defensive reaction to the trauma of being taken hostage. This is willful you know, people who have bought into propaganda and live in a information ecosphere that is solely one source.
Yeah.
So they brainwash themselves. They self-radicalize. De-radicalization that I recommend in this Washington Post op-ed starts with what's been happening for the last 2 weeks, which is shaming, publicly shaming people, showing people getting arrested, and allowing that to influence them through doubt. And as we call mm-hmm. it in with Islamic extremists, the doubt weapon. Make them wonder whether the legitimacy of what they're doing is real. And that's what we have to do. So these people who are getting pulled off of airplanes and are being told they're on the terrorist watch list, they hate the idea of being equated to terrorists. Well, you shouldn't have attacked the Capitol. That injects doubt into their information system. I don't know if it'll ultimately work, but we'll see. It's a good start.
On that, Jay says, what are the chances that the feds don't know who started QAnon? I can't believe they don't know. They just can't reveal their capabilities of surveillance.
Yeah, I think we know who started QAnon. Jim would probably talk to that.
I can't either.
Okay. Robert.
I don't know.
You can't.
I have my
Q
clearance, but it wasn't me.
Wait a minute. Well, how about you share it with the rest of us? Who started QAnon?
It's believed to be a moderator on 8chan who started this whole thing off. And as a matter of fact, a couple of days ago, we gave a statement saying that, you know, it was a good run. Trump didn't do anything. Let's step away from this. But it's way beyond the guy who started it. Now it's inculcated itself as a base operating system of the Republican Party. It's never going away.
Thank you for asking, Linda. I thought we were violating state secrets or something.
No, it's not that. I mean, I you know, again, we know he was a major portion of it, but there's a lot of question as to whether he was the mouthpiece. Or, I don't know his name.
No. Yeah, Linda, I'll send you an article. It's been reported
thank
in
you.
The press.
I feel like I don't know the password, you know, the code to get in the
But I was going to say, but a big part of
the password is cuckoo. Go ahead. Yes.
But a big part of how QAnon works is people finding spurious correlations between things and then making them real. I could go into detail, I won't. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting is these people are experts at that. And when you start breaking that down, then what they do is start looking for other places that's happening. And so, you know, they move into other things. It becomes more diverse. Without someone to pull that stuff together, it's hard to maintain these kind of large conspiracies. So it'll be really interesting to see if new leadership emerges, to see if different people start to come in. So that doubt thing also, the second thing is diffusion. So doubt and diffusion are two things that it's really going to be interesting to see whether those break it up or whether a new core forms.
Linda, to answer your, yeah. Linda.
I just wanted to shout out to Liz, who wrote us a letter and said, I also thought Amy Klobuchar did an outstanding job yesterday. So did I. I thought she was terrific.
Yeah.
She's a great host.
Okay, and I have to say this. I thought that her fashion choice was outstanding. She was the only one who seemed to have had somebody remind her, or she did it herself, that the television background was a blue background with a red stripe on each side, and her wearing school bus yellow was more appropriate. In other words, it fit the production design. Somebody looked and said, here's what you're going to see on the screen, blue and red. And it was a more fortunate choice, say, than Dr. Biden, who chose an aqua blue. I'm merely pointing out from the optical point of view. That's enough about fashion for me. I don't know anything about it. Anyone who's ever seen me on TV knows.
Linda, the answer to your question is a gentleman by the name of Jim Watkins, who is an American businessman and the operator of the image board website 8chan and the text board website 2channel.
So, I'm all for saying people's names these days on this.
Well,
Call them out and remember the names.
So he's the one who's been identified, and again, I just didn't have his name at hand. But there were essentially three people who were the moderators of various things on 4chan and things like that. And I'm sure their names are known, but I don't know them. I could give you their handles and things, but they change from time to time and things like that. But I'm saying, in other words,
not saying the name because
on purpose. No, just because we
know. No. I mean, I was trying to make it clear. I mean, there are security issues, but that wasn't it in this case. But these other people, they haven't yet been publicly identified by other than their pseudonyms.
Peter writes to us and says, this has been the most enjoyable roundtable ever. A really good time. You/we deserve it. Yeah. We got this from Robert. To me, a highlight was Kamala Harris swearing in her replacement, Alex Padilla, in the Senate. She laughed heartily and got a big round of applause. Kathleen says Biden had more flags in attendance at his inauguration than any other president in history, period.
Fox News did report that less people showed up for Biden's inauguration than Trump's. I thought that was one of my highlights of the day.
Can you imagine?
Deanne said, I heard a very short interview with Ken Burns last night where he said that we were purified by this inauguration, purified from what we have been through for a new beginning. It was a beautiful sentiment, and I agree. Susan said,
Have any of you been in the room with Ken Burns? I did an interview with Ken Burns. We were both interviewed on MSNBC. He's an incredibly powerful character.
He is.
When he says something, it's like Lincoln is talking to you, right? I mean, he's something else. He says it. It's gold.
Susan writes that some story about Amanda Gorman on Nick News at 11. Linda, my son is 38 now. We always watch your show, and I actually taped it several times to share with my fourth grade class. It was very fine, especially at that time. So pass that along to you. Lauren says, love the Pledge of Allegiance being beautifully signed as well as spoken. Yep. Thank you for your show. Edie says, I dissolved into tears off and on all day yesterday and think I may be in that state for a while yet. I think I may have some idea of how political hostages or survivors of horrific domestic abuse must feel upon being released. We're not out of the woods yet, but I have a bit of hope that we as a people may yet prevail with our souls and our democracy intact. Bob says, for those of us who don't see what these folks write on the web, could there be more about what was being said there, which I think we addressed. Let's see. I don't use the word shame often, but yesterday was the first day in 4+ years that I haven't felt deep shame, frustration, and horror for what might be unleashed on the world from Donald Trump. This from Lynn. I add my thanks to WAMC's wonderful panel and staff. I'll be sending an extra pledge this year. Well, that's sweet of you. Thank you. Jim says, it's nice you guys want to talk about fashion, but how about the 20,000 American jobs that Biden slashed in his first day as president?
Huh?
What job? Must have missed that.
Huh?
Say that again? Sounds like the right-wing media is at work already.
Maybe they're talking about people who are building the wall?
A wonderful piece was making the circulation yesterday. My son sent it to me of a Trump supporter. You'll tell I'm an elitist by my next comment. She was toothless and disheveled, and she's sobbing into the camera about, Mr. Trump, save us from what's coming. It's the apocalypse. And she meant Joe Biden. So our euphoria is not shared by many of our compatriots. And they are still spreading disinformation.
Apparently,
some of the new crazy theories are truly crazy. That everyone he appointed was Jewish, you know, things like that. I mean, it's just amazing what's going on out there.
The 20,000 jobs were the jobs for the Keystone Pipeline, were the jobs that he was referring to. So,
give me a break. If you go on the right wing website, thedonald.win. Which is, I mean, that is the diehard.
I'm sorry, wind?
Of the dot wind, dot W-I-N.
The okay, Donald not wind.
W-I-N.
Okay.
It's still open. They commonly and routinely refer to him as G-E-O-T-U-S, not President of the United States, but God Emperor of the United States.
Yep. Suzanne wanted Linda to know that Senator Klobuchar was wearing her University of Minnesota colors, just in case you wanted to know that. Also, we got this.
I've never actually been on a political talk show where we did this, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. We don't want to do it every day, but
it shows that we are actually breathing again and have rediscovered a sense of humor and feel it that it is okay at this moment to stand down and share a laugh and talk about something lighthearted.
Right, you are.
Dan,
much as I hate to correct you, Linda, that is not true. I remember in the last inauguration talking a lot about Kellyanne's outfit, and not, that was not matched 4 years later.
I did not watch that inauguration, so I had nothing to say. I did not turn my TV on that day, and I was in the street the following day.
I was in the streets the next day, but I watched every minute. She was dressed as a militia man, as a one of the minutes.
Wasn't she like little drummer boy or something?
Yeah,
it looked like that, exactly. So fashion is always something worth talking about because people's appearance reflects who they really are.
Okay.
Or who they think they are.
Dan writes, may I ask Malcolm how long does it take to figure out the failures of security at the Capitol on January 6th?
Well, if it's like any other commission, it'll take 6 months to a year. It'll take 3 months to stand up the commission and a year to start doing the basic work. The failures were fundamental, and this is the basis of my op-ed in the Post, is that they viewed these Trump supporters as friendly, as people that wouldn't do anything, as supporters of the president. Therefore, the optics would be bad to have treat them like Black Lives Matter. And in fact, that ultimate white privilege was a weapon that the protesters used against them. If Black people had charged a door like that anywhere else, there would have been a massive death toll. So they used their privilege very, very well. And that is going to, we're going to have to go to the Israeli method, right? Everybody's guilty until we search you and you're not guilty. So, it'll be a lot less friendly at the front gate of the Capitol, but it'll be a lot more secure.
Let me just finish up the letters, and then we'll move on here. This one from Michael. Amanda Gorman brought tears and happiness knowing that there are people like her using poetry to teach us and inspire us. I'm hopeful again because of Amanda Gorman. Rich says, Malcolm, what do you think will happen to the members of Congress that were against the counting of the electoral ballots?
Oops, sorry. I'd like to hear Alan's take on that because, what do I know about Congress? All I know is some people need to be held account.
I agree with that. People have to be held to account, and I don't think anything will happen, and I don't think they will be held to account. These are people who, I hope I'm wrong, but the downside of holding them to account is our constituency elected this guy or this woman, and therefore, you are interfering with it in a most undemocratic Russian way. They should be held to account, no question about it to me, but do I have any great hope that it will happen? Not really.
Kevin writes and says, I rushed home from work yesterday, immediately ran to check and make sure Biden hadn't come over to my house and taken my guns away like he and Obama didn't do years before. I don't know if I can handle the next 4 years of stability and humility, but I'm bored already. That from Kevin. We got this from Deborah, who says, for the past 4 years, I've been driving around with a bumper sticker that said, my dog is smarter than the president. Yesterday, I removed it. What a wonderful feeling that was. Rick says, perhaps this has been touched on previously, but just as Mayor de Blasio has voided contracts with Trump Inc., can't the federal government void the lease agreement with the Trump Hotel in D.C.? Rosemary?
I think there's going to be an inspector general's report on that, investigation on that. I think that thing's done.
I know, Rosemary, you've been watching that project very closely.
I am, and this is something that could have been done, should have been done, in my view, over the past 4 years. Trump dismantled inspector generals. He tried hard to get rid of anybody who was looking into things he was doing wrong, and that will end. I mean, Biden is going to bring that back and may even have an ally in Chuck Grassley, who knows, in bringing back regulation of that sort. So, that lease is so clear, saying no one who has a role in the federal government should hold this lease. And it was the president. It was you know, the biggest hold of anybody. So that was crazy. I regret that the emoluments clause, that those suits that have meandered around the courts for 4 years now, those will probably go away because the question is moot, which leaves it open for someone else, say another Trump child, to do the same thing Trump did, which I think was deeply wrong and unconstitutional.
You know, Rosemary,
you could always put in ethics laws to put teeth into them. You know, like this case of Trump extending bodyguards to his children and other people for 6 months, which Joe Biden could pull today. I know he won't. I'd do it quietly next week, though.
Alan?
We haven't talked about it today, I don't think, unless I was in another place. But we really haven't talked about the fact that Biden referred to Trump's letter as being a nice letter.
Yeah, gracious.
A gracious letter.
And
that's right.
What was the other word? Another G word. Gracious and I forget what it was.
Whatever.
Generous.
The point is,
generous. That's right. Generous. Thank you, Jim.
So the point really is that Biden is going out of his way to bring people in and not to keep people out. And I think his remarks on that letter were extraordinary, considering everything that Trump has tried to do to Biden and to Obama and to all the other Democrats. I think the name of the game here is inclusion. So, Rosemary, I'm concerned that, you know, there should be a commission, there should be this to discuss the White House and the rest. I think that stuff will disappear, but I don't think he's going to take prisoners.
Rosemary?
I don't think Biden is going to be the one to hold it to account. I think Congress will.
And that's where it should be. I just want to make sure that Biden does not extend, like put orders on the Attorney General, who could do a lot of this. I know Adam Schiff is working on a series of ethic laws, as Malcolm has suggested, that would have real bite in them, real consequences, and not just depend on shame or ridicule, which we now know there are some players like Donald Trump who don't have those emotions. We need laws that are laws, not just traditions and norms.
Biden has
no taste for any of this, and I'm sorry for
that's
that,
right.
But he does have a whole lot of other things to do, and that's probably right. I cannot fault him for making COVID the absolute focus, at least at the start of his administration. He must do that. But we, the people who lived through this past 4 years, who have been on this show every day talking about what's needed, we cannot let the pressure on our other elected officials who can do something, we cannot let that down.
And Rosemary, you don't think for a single second that if Joe Biden says, listen, let's not get this thing going, what we want here is a sense of inclusion, that he's not going to get it? By the way, Rosemary, for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, I agree with you. With you that he has to be held to account. That Trump has to be held to account in so many ways. But yes, I think that Biden is committed to toning it down.
Well, Joe Biden has made it clear that he's not going to order the Attorney General to do anything, which means that these investigation complaints are going to come from IGs now that the IG Inspector General's Corps is being reconstituted everywhere. People are going to go to work and they're going to start scrubbing those computers and they're going to be finding crimes everywhere. So Joe Biden can sit back in the White House and relax while Congress, the Justice Department, the FBI, and all others start saying, hey, we found real crimes here. We got to take care of this. And Biden will go, awesome, that's your job. I'm not involved.
Let's talk about... Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
No, okay.
I hope Malcolm's right.
The Senate confirmed Avril Haines to be the Director of National Intelligence. She was Biden's first cabinet nominee to receive a vote. So Malcolm will ask you what you make of that. And then in the 3 minutes we have before a break, also just talk about where we are, do you think, with the rest of the cabinet being appointed?
Yeah, solid pick in Avril Haines, big in the national security world, good manager, which is what we need now, and another person who is going to have to come in and scrub things. And when she starts finding out the classified information that John Ratcliffe and Richard Grenell access to use as politics, she will be forced to have to report this. And, you know, which means criminal charges against these people are likely going to come because they will likely, you know, but from what we've seen, they were using classified information as hammers, and their jobs did not authorize that. Same with Ezra Cohen Watnick over at the Pentagon and the rest of these yahoos. You know, the laws that they ignored are going to be applied, and people like Avril Haines are going to have to just say, hey, they violated the law. IG has it. It's going to the Justice Department. I'm going out for coffee.
Rosemary, as far as getting the rest of the cabinet through?
What you saw were 10 votes against her. As Malcolm said, I mean, there just could not have been a more sterlingly qualified person for that job. And there were 10 Republican votes against her. I think Lawrence O'Donnell last night said it right, saying that's a pattern for what's coming. You're going to see blocks put up to Trump appointees, regardless of their qualifications. And those 10 are part of them. Ted Cruz is one of them. Josh Hawley is another of them. So that's the baseline to watch, that nobody's going to go through with a 100-0 vote.
Yes, but on the other hand, people have been going through with 53-47, 52-48. So I thought 84 was a great number.
All right, we got to take a break.
Just throw in one quick one.
I got to hold you. I'm sorry. Yeah, we only have 4 seconds. We'll be right back right after this.
Good morning. Our last go around with our wonderful panel this morning. Only about 15 minutes left. Alan Chartok, Jim Henwer, Malcolm Nance, Linda Ellerbe, and Rosemary Armeo. We do still have time for your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. It's striking, Alan, just to hear in the BBC News just a moment ago of Anthony Fauci going to the WHO and speaking on behalf of the United States about what needs to be done in coronavirus. It's
I was just talking to my Anthony Fauci doll, which Roselle bought for me. It's in, on my shelf there, and telling him, "Good job, Anthony. I'm glad you're doing it."
Scary.
Oh, really? What? What are you sorry about?
Is it a bobblehead?
No. It's a doll. It's a full doll. It's very nice. And Roselle has one.
I could bring over my Ruth Bader Ginsburg doll and they could play together.
Yes, they could.
I have the Alan Chartok doll that Alan gave me.
Yeah, the bobblehead. Yeah, that's
bobblehead,
right.
Yeah.
Bobblehead, yes.
Yeah, quite famous. Murray, by the way, who is with me, is 14 years old now, and I worry every day about him. He's the cutest dog in the world, and we love him, and this is the downer coming. I worry all the time, and Roselle tells me not to.
It is sad.
Chris Churchill has a wonderful column about dogs. It's based on the two German shepherds going into the White House, but I recommend it. He has a great line about watching a beloved animal turn gray in the mouth and how it teaches you the horrible restrictions of time. It's really good.
It's so true.
I am hoping. Go ahead, Jim. I was going about to ask you a question, and can I still do that, or do you want to do?
Please, please.
Okay,
please.
You had sent a news item to me from Fox News, which I thought was interesting, and it was basically on how the transfer of the nuclear football went yesterday, because traditionally that would all happen in Washington, because the president would be at the leaving president would be there, and the transfer would happen while the new president is being inaugurated. But obviously the former president was in Florida or on his way, and the newly elected president or the newly inaugurated president was in Washington. So, tell us about that transfer of the football. I was most fascinated to find out that there were multiple footballs.
Yes. So basically the president has two powers with respect to nuclear. One is to authorize an attack, and that actually takes a very large chain of command. The other one is to respond to an attack. So if we were attacked, the president can very quickly say, you know, we have to launch in response. And the nuclear football has all the information, codes and things like that related to that. The military attaché who covers that must be within a certain distance of the president at all times. And so now you had a problem that we were going to have a transfer of power, and they were going to be in two, you know, one's in Florida, one's in D.C. So they actually created a second variant with a different set of codes, and at noon had an automatic clock to set from the Trump codes to the Biden codes. And, you know, Trump's military attaché traveled to Florida with him while Biden was doing this. And it's just the kind of level of detail you need to get into in some of these things, but also the impact that something that seems like a trivial decision that Trump's not going to apply really has these deep implications throughout that Trump wasn't going to attend.
Now, what about
a lot of going on?
Now, what about Pelosi going to the general and saying, "I'm worried about this guy, you know, doing a surprise on us based on nuclear," and the general saying, "Don't worry about it." At least that's what I took away from the news reports. What do you think that's more or less the
authorizing attack part. It's hard, you know, the president has the authority, but it's not that easy. Malcolm, you may want to say
Malcolm,
something.
Malcolm, you went in on this?
Yeah. I actually worked at I did a short tour at a National Nuclear Command post. And if you ever want to see a place that makes you an ardent anti-nuke, go into one of these underground cave facilities that's designed for the government. And you walk in, they show you the simulation attack. You walk out like you hate nuclear weapons, right? You don't ever want to see them used. So what happens is, and Jim was absolutely right, you know, there's only one commander in chief at any given time. And Trump's football, which is a communications and strike options package, is encrypted to him and at that time. And, you know, that can be changed, like you said, digitally. There's a clock. And at 1 minute or at 12 o'clock exactly, Biden's activates. And his codes are the only authorized codes. So Nancy Pelosi can ask the Department of Defense these things, but the code that really matters in, with regards to the presidential power is whether the order is a lawful or an unlawful order. Donald Trump could have given a lawful order to destroy Paris, for example, right? Submarine-launched ballistic missile. We determine France is a mortal threat to the United States, destroy Paris.
Or
so
Iran.
The military has an obligation to resist and reject and not carry out unlawful orders. If they're morally unlawful, and that came from the My Lai massacre, right? So you can't commit genocide because the president told you to commit genocide. We're now trained to question these orders. You know, but if there's a verified, you know, 3,000 missile strike package coming from Russia, believe me, we're going to know it. And it can be confirmed 40 different ways, including actually seeing the missiles fly. Right. There's no way to have accidents anymore. But then, you know, the world's over. So what does it matter? So Trump lost all of that ability the second that those codes changed. And I mean, he could have tried it, but no one's going to, you know, no one's going to follow those orders. They're going to be like, yeah, right, man, forget it. I'm going to slow walk it. I'm going to go get a coffee first. By the way, that's how we slow walk everything. We go to the cafeteria, we get a coffee. Take a 7 days.
I love you, Malcolm, but it makes me have a headache to hear anybody in the military say mistakes cannot be made anymore.
Hold on. Verification
systems are deep. They're very deep now. Sure. You can't do it in the old days where you would get like a thermal plume or something. That could be a test bed. You would have to get hundreds, I mean, verified by 4, 5, 7 satellites and visuals. You can now get visuals on live launch and civilian airliners looking at missiles flying into space. So no one is, you know, we're pretty solid these days. I mean, we got YouTube.
Rosemary, I have one I think you'd really love, which is when I was learning some of this stuff, the military and strategic command and places like that, actually will show you little video clips from Hollywood movies. And they say, you know, we watched this movie and realized it was possible to do this thing the way the script writers had done it. So we changed our ways of protecting it to get deeper. So they actually, you know, every time you see a Hollywood movie where somebody steals a nuke or does something unauthorized or something, they scrutinize those and look to see whether any of that's possible. So over the years, you know, we obviously haven't had a lot of practice against the enemy, but we've had a lot of practice against Hollywood.
Anybody who thinks anybody who thinks this can't go wrong, we have seen so many screw-ups in our lives. You know, it's just wrong. I mean, this is very terrifying in my mind.
Yeah. Going wrong is different from not verified. I mean, unverified. Yeah. So, you know, Trump was a wash with going wrong. But one little joke, since we're all having a good time here today. There was a joke in a movie once called The Department of Cool Things We Saw in the Movies, which was a subordinate department of the Department of Defense, where they would see things in the movies and then create them. That's called DARPA, right?
Yes, I loved DARPA. I was at DARPA for a few years. That's where I learned a lot of this. We were also known as the Mad Professors Organization. We were known as the Mad Scientists Agency.
Oh, good.
It's true.
Oh, good. We need more mad scientists. That's good.
I was so happy to be there. I was affirmed a mad scientist. I have my official mad scientist, but not in my office.
Okay, so Rosemary Armijo, what are you looking for today? What do you think the next couple of days are going to be like?
I think they're going to be way fun. I think he made, 17 executive orders yesterday. I think that's going to continue. I think we're going to see I hope that information is going to start coming out today on what we talked about earlier, scrubbing computers and looking in files that have been controlled by the Trumps up to now. I hope that will begin to come out. That's what I'm looking for. And I'm sorry, I'm shallow today. I like fashion. And I want to know that Trump is in Mar-a-Lago suffering. I hope there's something on that.
Linda?
May I?
Yes, please.
Yeah. I'm going to round this out by being corny and referencing fashion as well, because I'm not going to be on for a while. This is my last show for a while. But I want to say that I have never thought of America as a melting pot. The better analogy for me has always been pieces of fabric, our clothes, various things like that. You take old torn clothes and you stitch them together, and what you have is a patchwork quilt. And that's how I see our country. And people say, we're broken now. Yeah, we may be torn apart, but we can stitch the quilt together from all the variety and diverse pieces that we all bring to it. And let us just remember that a patchwork quilt keeps you just as warm as a quilt made from one piece of fabric.
Absolutely.
I want to leave everybody with that, because we are a patchwork quilt, and there is hope today that we can bring it together and stitch it up.
Joe, I have a very close relative who goes by the name of Debbie Downer,
yep,
who is looking at what Stephen Miller is doing now, and his anti-immigration and things, who is just depressed about the whole thing, says, here we go again, it's going to happen. I said, nope, not today.
Yeah, you know.
Nope, and I'm going to end with this, as I have to go at the moment. I'm going to just say what's been on my mind all day. Na 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 na. Hey hey hey. Goodbye. And I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about Trump. Bye guys. I gotta go.
Thanks, Linda. Bye. Appreciate it.
Bye, Linda.
Bye bye. Okay.
Bye, Rosemary. Bye, Malk. Bye, everybody. See you soon.
Bye.
See you later.
So, Joe, I just want.
Yeah, go ahead.
One quick thing. When you had mentioned Fauci. I won't go into details, but anyone who wants to see a real breath of fresh air in this administration, look at Biden's science picks. He has picked the most qualified people, the woman who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry, the most cited. His science advisor will be the most cited scientist in the world, who is not only going to be his science advisor, but promoted to cabinet level to be there for discussions of environment and COVID. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
And while we're on the subject,
we talk about mad scientists, but the non-mad ones are now going to take over.
And while we're on the subject, Joe Biden is keeping Christopher Wray as the FBI head. And you want to know something? I've thought all along that Christopher Wray had some real guts and was a stand-up guy. And apparently he said as Biden.
Very interesting. Any thoughts on that, Malcolm? Were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
Yeah, my last thoughts is this is a great day, and we've had a good time. I didn't have any really horrible, dire predictions right away. They'll come soon. But, you know, this is a great day for the United States, and I'm very proud to be an American. When I watched the inaugural show last night, I mean, I was in tears from time to time because I love this country. And this is the start of a new era. Oh, yeah. And last thing, I tweeted yesterday, in all caps, democracy's back, baby. And I carbon copied the Russian embassy in U.S.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad to hear that, Malcolm.
I want to thank you all for being with us this morning. A special show and a special day, and I thank you all very much. Alan, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thanks, Joe, for your leadership.
Thank you. Jim Henwer, Malcolm Nance, Rosemary Armeo, and, of course, Linda Ellerbe will be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.